Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End, a podcast in association with The Athletic, and this is The Athletic's Watford correspondent, Adam Leventhal. I hope you are very well and looking forward to football returning. Dave is with me today. Dave, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. It feels a long time ago now, doesn't it, since the Leeds game, since that mad 24 hours where Sisco was out, Ranieri was in, and we've kind of had that international break lull where we've all been doing other things. Now we've got Liverpool. Ranieri's had his first presser. Football's back. And I'm excited, but I'm nervous, but I'm ready for it.
Yeah, it's sort of excitement mixed with a heavy helping of trepidation, because you are coming up against a pretty awesome force in Liverpool. And we thought we'd do this podcast today to just sort of reflect on Claudio Ranieri's first news conference. It was at Vicarage Road on Wednesday, took place at around about 3 o'clock. Some of you will have seen some of the clips on Sky Sports News if you were watching. You might have seen some other clips on social media. And I do hope as well that you've read the article that I did on The Athletic, just trying to sort of put my take on what I heard and what I saw from Claudio Ranieri as he faced the media for the first time as a Watford head coach. And my sort of overall feeling on it really was that it was very assured, and he was pragmatic. He didn't overpromise, and he was just realistic, because let's be brutally honest, and I seem to say that all the time, don't I? Brutally honest, that he will know that it's less about what he says and it's more about what he does that is the most important thing. And if he manages to get all the way till the end of the season and he's still in with a chance of keeping Watford in the Premier League, then that will be a success, especially considering the wretched run of games that he has to start off with as the Watford head coach. Dave, obviously, you would have picked up bits on social media, you would have read the article on The Athletic and things like that. You know, how are you feeling from a sort of a fan's perspective now having Claudio Ranieri in the Watford dugout? Are you looking forward to seeing that?
Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed the shots that the club put out of him just kind of walking around the stadium. He's obviously been to the stadium many times as an opposition manager, but just kind of him walking around, just kind of looking at the stands, looking at the dugout, getting a feel for the place. It was nice to see him. Yeah, nice to see him in person, see him speak to the media. He's always good value, isn't he? We know that from his time, even his time at Chelsea back in the Tinkerman days. But, the Leicester, he was a media sort of darling, wasn't he, really, at Leicester, with the way he masterfully played that relationship with the media to kind of always keep the pressure off his players. At Leicester, the Fulham thing, we've spoken about that before. We know it didn't go well. We'll talk about that later, because he made a reference, a quite pointed reference, didn't he, to why maybe he thought it went wrong at Fulham. But if he can sort of slip back into that kind of charming, elder, gentleman kind of role, I think that might bleed through to the players. Like he kind of that air of like, don't worry, like I've seen it all before, it's all fine, like we know what we're doing, we know it's tough. Like he wasn't scared of even saying like, oh, Liverpool, like this is a really difficult game. This isn't a criticism of Sisco, but you can imagine if Sisco was sitting in that chair, he would have just probably gone, oh yeah, well it's a tough game and we'll do our best. But Claudio just approaches it in a different way. He's got that experience to be able to know when it's okay to kind of take your guard down and when to have your guard up. So I'm encouraged. I am encouraged just by having him here. I feel I feel more safe and secure and assured than I would have done, I think, if Cisco was still here.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And I think, you know, let's be sort of completely truthful with this. We all knew that Cisco was inexperienced, and ultimately that is what Gino Pozzo saw in the teams that he was putting out there and the performances. And he has gone to the polar opposite from, you know, from rookie to really vastly experienced head coach in Claudio Ranieri. And before we talk more about, you know, that experience side of things, and we will throughout the podcast just drop in a few clips from the news conference, I wanted to just touch on something that you mentioned, Dave, and the fact that it was, you know, Claudio Ranieri at Vicarage Road in front of a live studio audience. You know, the fact that it was in front of a room of journalists, it was a lovely thing to have back. Now, you know, many of you may not be aware, but in the championship, especially when we were in lockdown and there weren't any crowds, Watford were one of the only teams really that continued to do their news conferences for home games in person. It was still socially distanced, but they felt that it was important. In the Premier League, it is all still in-game via Zoom. So your pre-match and your post-match are all via Zoom. So this was outside a little bit of the Premier League remit. And I think Watford just wanted to be able to go, look, come on, we can be socially distanced. It can be controlled. Claudio Ranieri, unfortunately, and hopefully he will be able to do it in the future, this isn't going to be the day where he walks around the room and shakes everyone's hands like he did at Leicester City. He would love to do that. We're still going to sort of control that. But let's have that connection. And you get sort of an opportunity to, you know, just even make proper physical eye contact with a head coach rather than via the delay of Zoom, or, you know, in the future and in past, you know, news conferences with countless head coaches, managers, all sorts of different people, players. There is always that chance that, you know, if they take exception to something, or if they liked your line of questioning, or if they simply just want to say hello, how are you, all that sort of stuff, you can do that. And it's really, really important. I think it really does help. So it was a nice experience for everyone that was in the room to make that connection with Claudio Ranieri. And I think it was a nice start to his tenure, and hopefully it will continue beyond and into the new year, and, you know, even further than that, we hope. But just on that point of,
well, he did talk about next season, didn't he? He made a few mentions to, if we get 40 points this season, then we want to get 41 points next season. So a brave man, perhaps, from that standpoint. Yeah. Should we hear from him? Let's hear, because I thought the main opening question, and I think it was from Sky's Gary Cotterill, was quite an interesting one. His answer was interesting to me, and I think the question was simply, why Watford?
Why not Watford? Watford is a good team in Premier League. I know the Pozzo family since a long time ago. Once, I think 20 years ago, roughly, I met the father of Mr. Gino Pozzo, Mr. Giampaolo Pozzo. He wanted me in Udine. And we didn't achieve the. And then we always we were very, very close, but never I had the opportunity to manage the Udinese. And then when Mr. Gino Pozzo called me after the Leeds defeat and asked me, Claudio, would you like to come? And Watford, would you like to come back in Premier League? I said, why not? Unfortunately, my agent was here in England and met Mr. Pozzo. And then Sunday, I take a plane and arrive here.
Yeah, so there you go. I think it was it was an interesting start, and it did sort of clarify from his point of view the sort of the recruitment process. And I remember mentioning in a previous article that, you know, it was Claudio Ranieri's name was being mentioned behind the scenes. However, that has sort of translated through to actually getting through to the man himself, whether he was sort of being prepared and waiting in the wings is, you know, up for debate. And he said, you know, I didn't know until I got the call. So you have to sort of take him at his word. And another interesting thing that he said in the news conference, and it does reflect on that sort of experience side of things that we were talking about before, it came in another answer. Maybe we can drop that one in now. Just listen out for one little key sentence that he says in this, and then we'll just reflect on it in a moment.
In Italy, it's a normal to change managers. We have to do our best now. I can think about the previous manager, and Cisco was my player in Valencia. And then I hope he can find a new solution very soon. But now I have to do my best for Watford.
I'd love to know whether they've spoken. I don't know whether that was asked as a follow-up, but that's what I would have asked if I was there. You know, they obviously know each other. I wonder whether Ranieri's given him a call, either just to say, you know, good luck in the future, or to say, tell me, what do you know? Tell me about the players. Like, can you give me any help at all? Because we saw that Cisco posted on Twitter, didn't we? Sort of a very upbeat, positive, heartwarming message, sort of saying no hard feelings, good luck and I've loved my time. So I would be interested to know whether they've had a conversation. Maybe Ranieri thinks he's, you know, he wouldn't need to do that, but it was interesting that he made that reference, obviously, to Cisco being his player. And as you point out in your piece, kind of underlines just the difference from where we are now. We've gone from Cisco, this young guy, you know, it is what, late 30s, early 40s,
yeah,
I think, yeah. You know, yeah, early 40s to Ranieri, who is about to turn 70 next week. You couldn't really be further apart, could they?
I'm sure it was of interest to the other journalists in the room, but it just really sort of stuck out for me, and it really stuck a flag in the fact that there's such a disparity between, you know, the predecessor and the successor in terms of experience. And when you actually look at it, you know, he said that Cisco was my player at Valencia. That was in his second spell at the Mestalla. His second spell was already 16 years ago, and he was already 19 years deep into his managerial career as well. You know, he's been doing it for 35 years. And I just thought it was really interesting, and it just sort of set the tone for the rest of the discussion. And it was interesting for me.
I bet Claudio never thought he'd end up at Vicarage Road at 70, eh?
No. Yeah.
All those years ago, yeah, when he embarked on his managerial career, the long and winding road, or maybe the yellow brick road,
exactly,
indeed, would lead him to Vicarage Road.
No, it's true. But I mean, I think it was, you know, he mentioned it in one of the clips that we've played there, the fact that there has always been that relationship with the Pozzos, you know, older and younger. And it's, you know, funny that he would talk about, oh yeah, I remember, you know, being approached by Gino's dad. And, it, you know, it's like, that was 20 years ago. So I think it just reinforces, you know, how much of an institution he is. And James Horncastle wrote a great piece with that as the title, I think it was, on The Athletic, that he is an institution. And it's well worth digging that one out on The Athletic. But I did think that, it set the tone. And it also, I think, reminded the journalists in the room that you can speak to this guy about a whole range of topics. And, you know, he was asked about the Super League and, you know, whether almost what he did with Leicester City changed football altogether in 2015-16. It made sort of the little clubs dream again. And, you know, the Super League was almost going to stamp that opportunity out. And he didn't really bite on that as a topic, to be honest, because his sort of his MO is, it was pretty much the day after we won the title with Leicester City that I started thinking about the next thing. He doesn't necessarily look back too much. And I think that that's quite a good thing. And it may well come in handy, you know, when we've just played Manchester City, or we've just played Liverpool, or we've just played Chelsea in this next run of games. Because as he said as well, you know, there are going to be bumps in the road. There are going to be difficult moments, and we all need to stick together. And the one thing that I did think that was really interesting, that the main thing that he seemed to have taken from the Leicester City title win, which I actually felt was, I felt like it was like listening to one of your older relatives or to your dad or to your granddad or something like that, just saying something wise. And I really liked it. And he said that basically Leicester winning the title, it wasn't about the achievement itself. It was more that for anyone in life, it made them think that anything is possible. If it gave them the belief that they can go and do something, then that is something to be grabbed hold of. And I really like that. And I really hope, you know, that it is a successful time for Claudio Ranieri at Vicarage Road. And we just now have to sort of think, right, well, how do we manage this relationship? How do we, the fans, I mean, aside from me being a journalist, I'm a fan, you know, how is that connection going to be made? And it is basically what we see on the field. Because everyone loved Xisco Muñoz, you know, that they might have
You say that. Nobody disliked him. I don't think any. He didn't have any. There was no rancor towards supporters. But John said an interesting thing in the WhatsApp group last week that he felt like he never had a relationship with Xisco. And I think obviously the main thing for that is we had 5 games at Vicarage Road with fans during his tenure, and you just don't have that chance. You know, he never had a song. No, you know, how many of our managers have had songs over the recent years? Quite a few of them. But Xisco didn't get one.
We need a one-size-fits-all one where any name can just slot in. Yeah. You are our manager for now. You are our manager, whatever it is. You know. Sorry, carry on.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, I feel like unless we have the worst-case scenario and it's a Fulham-style situation where he's here and he's gone, I feel we will have a connection with Claudio. I just from hearing him yesterday, knowing the guy he is, I think he will appreciate the importance of having a relationship with the supporters as well, and being that sort of open character and you know, wanting the crowd, leaning on the crowd to play their part. So that will be another interesting element of what's coming up, is that, again, we've got somebody that we can relate to in a way, or we can attach ourselves to, we can put our hopes in him, and hopefully we'll get a bit back from him. We will get more back from him than we got. Again, this is not a criticism of Xisco. He was chucked in at the deep end and did as good as he could have done, I think. But you'll just get to get more of a feeling from Ranieri. He'll you know, even though his English is still not perfect at the grand old age of 70, it's more expressive than Xisco's was, certainly than Vladimir Ivic's was before him as well. You know, we've got someone that we can enjoy hearing from, even in the bad times.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
We've seen clips of him on social media, and I think it's been interesting over the course of the international break just to see the little bursts of things that they've been putting out of him on the training field, and you know, and this maybe leads on to what we can talk about now tactically and his philosophy. I really like the one where he was just shouting second balls on the training field, you know, just sort of having that urgency, which was actually, and it's really strange actually, I think if you look at it, that was one of the successes, I thought, of Xisco Muñoz, his energy and the energy that he injected into his teams at all times in the Championship. And then I think he was thinking in the Premier League, we need to be different. We can't be so eager beaver. We have to be a little bit more reserved. We have to really concentrate on our shape and things like that. Yes, you do. But I think he lost something in doing that. And I think that Ranieri will bring that back. You know, he likes to press. He likes to be controlled in the way that they press. Just a little bit more focus, a little bit more of a... There will be a bit more weight to what he says. He will be able to give examples using, you know, experienced players. He'll be able to name drop, you know, managers and players that he's worked with, that the players will then be able to cross-reference and go, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. He's been here. He's done it. Let's trust what he's saying. Let's press here because this might happen in the future. And what I found...
Do you know my favourite thing about the clips from the training?
Go on.
Is the little stopwatch.
Yes.
I love his old school yellow stopwatch that he's got around his neck at all times. But you're right. He does. You see the little... And we all read too much into these clips, don't we, that we see 10 seconds of him talking to William Truster Kong. You know, God knows what they were saying. Probably saying, oh, you're okay. Yeah. Good journey in. Yeah. But we're sitting there thinking he's probably going, right, when you're here, you've got to do this and do that. But, like, I don't know. He's so experienced. You hope that he is imparting some of that knowledge. And he did talk in the press conference and said, if I can improve each one of our players just by a little bit, the whole team then improves by quite a lot.
Yeah. And he said he doesn't think that they, you know, that they've been asleep. They don't need to wake up. They just need to, you know, sort of change their philosophy a little bit. And I think that there are, it's interesting, you know, he got that reputation, and you mentioned it earlier, as, you know, the tinker man at Chelsea. And he was maligned for that reputation of changing too much at Chelsea all the time and then changing too much too soon at Leicester City. I think it is only tinkers here and there that Watford need. You know, he's got the squad that is actually quite a slender squad. It was looking, you know, rather bloated as we were coming in, you know, towards the end of the transfer window. But it has been streamlined. Obviously, there has been injuries, but there's been key departures. So there's not loads and loads of different options. There's just little things that he just needs to just eke out. And I think that, you know, he's got an opportunity just to sort of, with a decent foundation of 7 points from 7 games, you know, that's not to be sniffed at. It's not amazing. And yes, I'm sure we'll sort of drop into the relegation zone over the next course of however many games it is, depending on what happens. But, you know, there are only little things that he needs to do. And just get, like you say, and he mentioned it, you know, just little incremental improvements on what Sarr does and when he does it. That can be a game changer in matches, as we've seen against Liverpool at home, you know, back in last year before lockdown and things like that. That if he can get the players playing to their potential, and to be honest, we have said this on numerous occasions with every head coach that comes in, they want the best players on the pitch playing to their potential, the hierarchy, that's what they want. Hopefully, with the connection that Ranieri has with Gino Pozzo, with sort of, you expect them being on the same page, they will be able to come up with a solution, and hopefully he will be able to do it. And you know, you mentioned earlier on about he had a little dig at Fulham. It is worth mentioning, and it is a reminder that he's a bit more old school. he worked with another son of an owner. Shahid Khan is the owner of Fulham.
Tony Khan.
Yeah, so Shahid Khan's the dad. He was working with Tony Khan, and you know, he said he was into he used the word algorithmics, you know, so like stats and everything, and that is his background. Is that an actual word?
No.
I looked. Algorithmics is not a word.
Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart's preferred method of player recruitment.
Very good. But no, look, Tony Khan is into, you know, statistics, and that is his business background, and that's fine. But it just didn't match up with Ranieri. Ranieri is more into, I don't know, that the emotion. Yes, there is tactical nous to the whole thing, but emotion and the way of doing things, not necessarily the metrics, the tiny little, you know, data details. It's more about what he sees, whether it passes the eye test. And he did talk about the fact that, you know, that's what he was like as a younger player. It was all about being strong, being passionate, and, you know, winning your duels. It sounds very simple, doesn't it? But it's what everyone says. I think I've heard Graham Souness say it the other day. It's like the first thing that you do in a match is make sure you win your first tackle. Make sure you win your first battle against your opposite number. Mm. It's simple. And that's what Watford did against Aston Villa. They set the tone for the season. And you thought, wow, if they carry on doing that against whoever they're playing, but then they lost it. So if he can reinstall that, then I think he's got a chance.
He did talk about that. He did talk about, you know, some quite back to basic stuff about being aggressive. Yeah. You know, he said he likes English football because it's, even though the quality is high, there is still that element of it being a battle, and that you have to be strong and you have to win all your battles and everything. And that is true. The reference to the Fulham situation was interesting, though. So clearly there was something that didn't sit right with him there. And I think there have been other managers. I think even, you know, throughout Scott Parker's tenure, there was certainly grumblings.
Absolutely,
from
listening
to the guys who do the Fulhamish podcast for us. There, you know, the sort of Tony Khan situation continues to be an issue for them, I think. But it's not a million miles away from what he'll have to deal with here. Maybe he'll get less interference. Obviously, there's going to be, hopefully, certainly starting off on a better foot and a more of a relationship between him and Gino. But obviously, we've got Cristiano Giretta. We've got people in the backroom staff who will. I don't think they're going to sit down with Claudio and go, right, Claudio, who do you want in January? You know, it will be the usual process, won't it, of these are the sort of players we might bring in. This is what we're thinking of doing. He'll have an input. But equally, if you look at his time at Leicester, he had Steve Walsh with him there, who was there before him and was the guy that recruited N'Golo Kanté, who got Riyad Mahrez and unearthed some of these sort of gems and polished them up, and we all know what happened. So he will be comfortable in working in our structure, with our processes. But I think the key thing is obviously the relationship that he's already talked about should mean that it should be relatively harmonious off the field, I think. But as you say, you know, we've sat here, we've talked about what he said, how he makes us feel, his experience. And as you make the point in your piece, all of that will ultimately count for nothing if we then go on to lose the next 8 games. We have to see, if not points, we have to see improvement and reasons to be optimistic from the upcoming games, starting with this big game against Liverpool on Saturday, which is interesting that it is the reverse of Nigel Pearson's first full game in charge, which was against Liverpool at Anfield on a Saturday 12:30 kickoff. And if you remember that game, we did okay in that game, and that was when they were steamrolling their way to the title. And we nearly, you know, we on another day could have potentially got a point, or if not won on that day. And obviously, we know about the game at Vicarage Road as well. So, if you're going to catch Liverpool cold, it feels like to me this is the ideal chance to do it, because it's Saturday 12:30 after an international break. They've got some players missing. You know, it looks like the Brazilians, Alisson and Fabinho, won't be there. Thiago's not going to play. Trent Alexander-Arnold will be back, Klopp has confirmed. Diogo Jota probably back, maybe on the bench, but definitely fit enough to play a part. So, you know, maybe I'm clutching at straws. Maybe I'm just trying to find reasons to be optimistic, but it feels like there's a slight glimmer of hope, maybe.
Yeah, look, of course, and for all the reasons that you've mentioned, that there is a chance, being after the international break, maybe, you know, their first choice players might not all be available. Obviously, they are still a very, very talented squad. But yeah, there is an opportunity for Watford. And I think that the main element of it, and he, Ranieri, alluded to this in his news conference, is that he wants to make sure that in every game, and it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but that they walk off the field knowing that they have been in a battle and that they have given their best all the way through. If you compare it to the Leeds game, Watford didn't walk off, you know, in disarray. That, you know, everyone was looking and talking to each other, basically going, oh, I can't believe how we've been set up. But they weren't downing tools. They just weren't really prepared for that battle. And what Watford need to do is now against, you know, a similarly tricky opponent. You know, Leeds tricky because of the way that they play. Liverpool tricky because of the extreme quality, especially that they have in attacking areas. Watford need to put together a performance that will be heartening. You know, if it's backs to the wall all game, it's just the performance. And it's very similar, and it's a great point that you made about the Pearson's first game at Anfield. I was sat alongside Simon Hughes, one of the Liverpool writers for The Athletic, and he was like, I mean, and Liverpool were absolutely flying at that point. It was almost as if they just turned up and won, and it was easy. It was no problem. Watford turned up. Sarr was on the money. Doucouré could have scored. Sarr could have scored. They were flying, absolutely flying. And it took Liverpool to actually wake up to then go on and win the game. And I would expect that Liverpool will probably win at Vicarage Road. I have no problem in saying that because they have that quality. But if Watford can put away an early chance and get them thinking, the roof will be off once again. And it will be a great start to the Ranieri era. Just to show, and this is another thing, and there's a couple of other articles recently that I wanted to point you in the direction of on The Athletic. One that dropped today, Thursday, from Tom Warville, where he goes through all the data on how every team in the Premier League have been playing so far this season. And he does highlight the fact that Watford they're doing okay, and it's slightly surprising that they have got rid of their head coach, but they need to be more cohesive in the final third, and they need to be having more shots. Very, very simple. You know, they need to be upping their XG, looking more dangerous.
It's interesting to hear you say that, Adam, because reading the piece that you did in conjunction with, I think, Mark Carey, I don't know if Tom Wall had an input as well, but another one of our stats guys, Mark Carey, and reading James Horncastle's pieces on Ranieri in the last week or so, the data from his time at Sampdoria suggested A couple of things stood out. One was that they were very high in terms of winning the ball back, pressing. You know, the stat is PPDA, so passes per defensive action. How many passes do you allow the opposition per one of your defensive actions to win the ball back? They were one of the highest teams, even though they finished mid-table, they were one of the highest teams at PPDA in Serie A for Ranieri's final season. But they were not very high at all in terms of the goals they scored, the XG they had, and the shots they were taking on goal. So they were winning the ball back. They were a proper counter-attacking team. They were solid. But they weren't all action. They weren't flooding the opposition box. They weren't a high scoring outfit. So that he might change it completely. He might look at these players and think, I'm going to have to play in a different way. But if he does follow that template, that will be interesting to see how that sort of manifests itself on the pitch for us at this moment in time.
No, I agree. I think that's a really important point. But I think the fact that if you just take out the fact that we haven't really been pressing high at all, we might have been winning the ball back in our back four, but we didn't then necessarily know what the next step was. If we are going to be winning the ball higher up the pitch, if you go back to sort of the last Premier League season, a good example of this is against Bournemouth, for example. And I did a piece about Watford's pressing concern earlier on in the season. Doing it properly, not half-heartedly, press your opponent, cause the problems.
That's exactly
and
right.
And then you can break and you're breaking it's higher committing. Up the pitch. You know, do it properly. If you're going to do it properly. If you're not going to do it properly, don't bother at all because you're wasting energy.
Yeah.
You know, that's I think that's the main thrust for Ranieri. And he will know, right, we are going to do this. I will back you to do this. And I will also have a plan of action if our press gets played through. you know, because I hopefully will have drilled my defenders to defend better, or I will demand it for my holding midfielder to make sure that he gets back. There's no one's going to run past us. You know, it's going to be these sort of key elements. So it's going to be fascinating to watch the game against Liverpool to see the tangible differences. But I think and this is another thing to also just mark everyone's card, that he's been in an international break. He hasn't had some of his key players. I mean, obviously, you know, Francisco Sierralta is out for a longer period. Christian Cabasele is going to be out for a little bit longer. It was encouraging that Joshua King is sort of, although his knee is strapped up, he is seemingly come back earlier than was expected. So that is good. But obviously, he's had all his international players away. He's only been able to start training with his full group that is available on Thursday. So I think he also knows, yes, I've been able to train with a select group of players, but I'm not really going to know the issues until I see it out on the field. And yes, he will have done his video analysis. He's got trusted assistants who will have done that and things like that. But until he has been able to go, right, I'm going to tell them to go and do this, and then I will see whether they do it against a really tough opponent, until the end of that game, he probably won't really know what he's going to do for the next game. So this is almost like a really sort of acute test of his sort of managerial nous to be able to try and put a team together, having not really trained with them for the majority of this 2 weeks, as he's also getting his you know, his feet under the desk.
Yeah, definitely. And we obviously made the point about Liverpool waiting for players to come back from the international break. We're in the same boat. You know, a lot of our players will be in exactly the same position. So, you know, it depends which way you want to look at it, really, doesn't it? And it will be definitely be a challenge for Ranieri to get the team playing how he wants in just face of basically only having worked with most of them for a few days. So we should temper our expectations slightly. We should definitely remember that on Saturday, even if it goes horrendously wrong. I've just got memories. We've kind of forgotten about it because of the last couple of games have been okay. But there was a series of absolute batterings at the hands of Liverpool, weren't there? You know, a few seasons back, I was at Anfield for one. I think it was 5-1, maybe 6-1. And yeah, I still have nightmares about that journey home. But yeah, I just don't want to see that. And I think the thing that a lot of people are concerned about is the central defence. As you mentioned, Sierralta is out injured, maybe not for as long as we initially feared, but still out for a couple of weeks yet. Cabasele looks like he'll be out for longer than Sierralta. Both got injured at Leeds. Nicholas Nkoulou is not ready yet. He hasn't played any football for quite a long time. He's obviously been brought in as cover, but Ranieri said he won't be ready for at least 3 weeks in terms of getting himself up to match fitness and up to speed. So it is very much over to you, Craig Cathcart, William Troost-Ekong. You are the only two left, and you've got to deal with it. And we've had our concerns about Cathcart already this season. We know Troost-Ekong's strengths and weaknesses. So we're going to have, you know, they're going to have to be the guys. And God forbid if one of them gets injured or sent off. If Craig, you know, that's the thing. If Cathcart is on like a yellow card at any time in the next couple of weeks, he's going to be really worried about having to really walk on eggshells in terms of not getting a booking and getting a suspension. So that is the concern. But all most other areas of the team, you'd think, okay, we're looking okay. Atibo's injured, but still got plenty of options in the midfield. Josh King might be back, but again, still got plenty of options up front. So there's, as we've mentioned, there's plenty of things for Claudio to work with. I thought we should just finish on one final clip of Claudio. And I think this is something that will very much run and run, because I don't necessarily think we're going to get a resolution to it this weekend. But as you'll remember, when he was at Leicester in that season, they were struggling to keep clean sheets for a little while. I think this is sort of halfway through the season when they were kind of bubbling away, but they, you know, needed to be a bit better. And he really wanted them to keep clean sheets. And he said to the media, if we keep a clean sheet against Stoke in the next match, I will buy my players pizza. I've promised them that they can have pizza. That's their reward. That's their incentive to keep a clean sheet. So somebody at the press conference yesterday asked him the same question, whether he was going to employ that same approach if we get a clean sheet against Liverpool.
Ah, no pizza. I pay a dinner if I take a clean sheet. A pizza is too little. No. A dinner. Thank you.
So the big question is, where's he going to go for dinner? I think the obvious first choice would be La Tista on the high street.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And it's interesting you mentioned Latista, because during this international break, and sometimes, you know, you get an opportunity to sort of branch out a little bit and do things that are a little bit unexpected. I caught up with Tamás Priskin, and he said one of his favorite restaurants in Watford was Latista. And I have such fond memories of taking my late grandfather there. He used to love going to Latista. I used to go to the Latista in North London under a bridge in Golders Green, which was near to where I grew up in North London. And that was one of the day at one time I got starstruck, but I was so proud of myself that John Barnes, who was still playing then, he was having dinner at Latista, and I saw John Barnes on a table next to us. And I thought, right, I'm going to go and ask him for his autograph. I'm going to do it. And I went over and I went, yeah, John, yeah, can you sign that for me? Yeah. Like, I don't know how old I was, 13 or 14, whatever it was. Signed it, and I was 10 foot tall after that. I couldn't be too tall because it is under a bridge. But, you know, it was, no, I have, like, Latista means a lot. So, yeah, hopefully. But then I suppose he's not going to go to Latista because it's a pizza restaurant. So this is all sort of a moot point, really, isn't it?
They probably do pasta as well.
They could do pasta.
Probably rustle up a few steaks if they ask nicely.
I would hope so. But no, yeah, it would be nice. And yeah, it was just that, I suppose, just to round it all up. By the way, you can read that piece about Priskin on The Athletic. But on, you know, Ranieri, he was warm. There was moments where he was witty, but there is depth. And there is substance to what he says. And hopefully, and I know we've been here countless times before, but hopefully it is the start of a beautiful relationship between Ranieri and Watford. Fingers crossed. Just a quick word. If you aren't yet a subscriber to The Athletic and you want to become part of the family and read all the articles that we do whenever there is a head coach transition, about analysis of how the team is performing. Oh, quick word, by the way, on Imran Luzer as well. I dropped him into an article on The Athletic about the player that I want to see playing more minutes, because I think if he can get him playing, and I know I can see your face because we're recording this over Zoom, Dave, you're already like, just shut up about Luzer, okay? Just shut up about Luzer. It's not going to happen. But
he got an assist for Morocco.
He did. Well, there you go. You see, it's gradually getting better. Yeah. So yeah, I did do I contributed to a broader piece where all the reporters put in who they want to be playing more minutes for their club. So I put in Imran Luzer. So yeah, you can read that, all the analysis, all that sort of stuff, and a whole range of other stuff on The Athletic. And if you want to be part of it, go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you'll be able to get a discount currently of 33% for your subscription. That is a bit of a bargain. So join in. And of course, after the game against Liverpool, there will be another From the Rookery End podcast. We are here after every game and every Thursday as well. That's when I take the big boy seat and host the show alongside the cast of many that contribute to From the Rookery End. So, Dave, thank you very much indeed. Enjoy Saturday.
Thank you. Hopefully I will.
Yes.
Come rain or shine.
Yeah, quite right. Let's just go out there, enjoy it, and, you know, let's be the underdog and enjoy being the underdog. You know, if the worst happens, it happens, but let's give it a good bloody go. Thanks very much, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you after the game against Liverpool. Fingers crossed. Take care.
The Athletic.